Okay. So our portion today is Parshat Balak. Balak was a king of Moab. And he got very frightened because here comes the children of Israel, right, from Sinai. They had just defeated the kings of the Amori, Og, and Sihon. And next on the route that obviously the children of Israel are following is Balak. So he goes to a prophet and to get him to curse Israel. The prophet's name is Balaam, and he is not a prophet of Israel. He's a Gentile prophet. Now there's several Gentile prophets that are in the Bible, and Balaam is probably the most widely known. Now, he is a prophet of God, but he's not a prophet of Israel. Anybody understand the difference?
Yep.
Okay. What is a prophet of Israel? Okay. Prophet of Israel has to fulfill two very basic requirements. Prophet of Israel is a prophet of God, first of all, and second one is the leader of Israel. Okay? And if you miss one of those two, you're not a prophet of Israel. So there's a lot of people through the Bible, through the Tanakh specifically, that make prophecies, but they're not prophets of Israel. Usually it's because they don't fulfill any sort of leadership position. Right? Prophet of Israel is a prophet of God, and then usually spends their time telling Israel how they're messing up. Prophets of Israel are usually not the favorites of the kings, not the favorites of the leaders. So Balaam is not a prophet of Israel, but he's a prophet. So Balaam goes and talks to God, which is what he tells Balak he's going to do, and God says basically, no, you're not going to curse Israel. I've blessed them. And Balak gets mad and says, go, you know, do it. And Balaam goes again to God and says, tell me what to say. And he says, no, you're not going to curse them. You're going to bless them. Goes a third time. It's a big loud no. And then Balaam gets coerced by Balak, basically, and gets on his donkey and starts to go to Balak. And angel of the Lord appears to the donkey, doesn't appear to Balaam, the prophet. And then God speaks through the mouth of the donkey. Not through the mouth of the prophet, through the mouth of the donkey. Okay? Why does God speak through the mouth of the donkey? Well, there's a great lesson here. The great lesson is God's the 800-pound gorilla. Where does the 800-pound gorilla sleep? Anywhere he wants. Okay, so God uses a donkey to show us that it could be anyone and anything. Okay, so a great lesson from this is God can use anyone and anything. Period. End of story. God can use anyone and anything. Okay? From the most meek among us to the most arrogant among us. And just to show you, he makes an ass of himself. He speaks to the donkey and shows Balaam. So Balaam goes and is supposed to curse Israel, and doesn't. And in the Torah portion, it gives one of the greatest moments in the history of the children of Israel. Where Balak thinks is going to curse Israel, stands up and looks out over the children of Israel's encampment. And he says, Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkanotecha Yisrael. Right? Oh, how good are your tents, O Jacob, and your dwellings, mishkanotecha, right? Which is not really dwellings, Yisrael. And your mishkan. And your mishkan. And your tabernacle. Your tabernacle, O Israel. And so, now we've gotten into a habit of reciting or singing the Ma Tovu as an introduction to services, and that's in this country. No other country in the world does that, by the way. The words are posted at the entrance to the sanctuary or the synagogue, and you're supposed to say them to yourself as you come in. But well, this is one of those Reformed Jewish traditions now that we have, that we sing the Ma Tovu as an introduction to services here. And it's okay. You get people from other countries rolling their eyes and saying, oh, it's the Americans. But that's okay. Just, if you go to a synagogue services in a different country, don't be shocked when they don't start with the Ma Tovu. Just so everybody knows. So, Balak here is dissed by God and by Balaam. And he's brought down a peg or two. And he is shown that he has to respect Israel. And this is a very, very important thing. This is an important thing. Because Balak is not the king of the Amori. He's not the king of the Amalekites. He's the king of Moab. He's the king of the Moabites. And the relationship between the Moabites and Israel will never be the same after this. It'll never be the same. It's a distanced respect after this. We're not going to mix with you, but we respect who you are. It's the children of Israel looking at Moab. And sure enough, a couple generations later, something very, very special happens to a Moabite. And her name is Ruth. So she comes from a generation or a couple of generations back during the time that the judges were judging and ends up converting and becoming part of Israel. And from Ruth comes David, and from David comes the Messiah. So it's very easy to look at this and point and say, it was Balaam, a non-Jewish prophet, that really initiated the line of the Messiah in Israel. And this shows us the very special role that non-Jewish people, with the relationship with Israel, actually established the Messiah within Israel. This is not such a bizarre thing. There are precursors and signs of what is happening today, even within the Torah itself. Okay? So if you're not Jewish, welcome. And if you're Jewish, welcome. And if you have no idea whether you are or not, welcome. All right? Because it's Balaam that brings forth Messiah from Israel. Shabbat Shalom. Okay. So we have the story of Balak and Bilam. And the donkey, and how God chooses to use the donkey. And in a similar fashion, he decides to use Shaul. We want to look a little bit at who Shaul is and this whole story. So, Shaul is a Pharisee, right? Everybody knows that he's a Pharisee. He says that he's a Pharisee. And then, just in case you didn't get it the first time, he says he's a Pharisee again in a couple of different books. He writes down that he's a Pharisee in one of his letters to the Philippians. And he's going around and attacking Messianic believers. Now, understand this was not necessarily the practice of the Pharisees. But it wasn't not the practice of the Pharisees either. The Pharisees were not monolithic. When you read the New Testament, if you don't understand the history of the people as it's going on, it talks about the Pharisees, and there's some Pharisees like they're all the same group of people. Historians, archaeologists at this point have uncovered that there were a minimum of 20 separate sects of Pharisees, of which Paul was one. And if you really look at the children of Israel, these aren't segmented like quanta, scientific quanta either. It's sort of a continuum smear. If you want to look at the Pharisees theologically and in their behavior. And there were some Pharisees that were kind of close to the Sicarii. They were kind of close to the Zealots, and certainly Paul was one of these. In fact, there were some Zealots that were close to the Pharisees. Okay, if you want an example of this, go back to the Apocrypha and look at Matityahu, Mattathias, and his sons. Judah, Shimon, there were six sons. And Judah, son of Matityahu, Yehuda, son of Matityahu, became later known as Yehuda HaMaccabi, Judah the Maccabee, and led the revolt against the Greeks. But before that, he and his roving band were running around Judea and Israel, killing assimilationists. They were killing the Reformed Jews of their time. Right? They're killing the secular. But and this is what they did. They were zealots in their time. So when Judah called them together and said, okay, we've been killing these guys enough, it's time to attack the Greeks, they were right there because they were used to this kind of behavior anyway. So this was actually a type of Pharisee. So you get, you know, roll fast forward for 150 years. And we're in the time of Yeshua, and here's Paul, and he's one of these zealot Pharisees. So he's going around harassing and killing Messianic believers. And he's following Pharisaic thought theologically. All right, I'll digress a little bit. So we've got 20 different groups, 25, maybe 30 different groups of Pharisees. So you have to stop and ask, okay, what makes a Pharisee? What is it that these guys all call themselves Pharisees, even though they're in all of these different sects? Okay, they don't call themselves Sadducees. They don't call themselves Essenes. They call themselves Pharisees. So what makes a Pharisee a Pharisee? I'm sorry, what? That's part of it, but a relatively minor part. Okay, What makes a Pharisee is, first of all, that they believe the entire Tanakh is the Bible. Not only the Torah, but the prophets and the writings as well. And they believe these things are given directly by God, much as we believe. Right? Now, the Sadducees didn't believe this. They believed the Torah was given by God, and the prophets are probably nice guys. And the writings, they're kind of nice. But like the Apocrypha, they were not canon given by God. Now, the Pharisees didn't believe this. Pharisees accepted the entire Bible. Pharisees believed in angels. They believed in an afterlife. And they believed in a resurrection. Sadducees didn't believe any of this. Right? And they believed in the oral interpretation of the Torah and the prophets that had been handed down from the Zugot, from the pairs, last of which, only a few years before Paul, was Hillel and Shammai. They accepted all of this. And these are the things that made them Pharisees. Now, after that, you're going to have all kinds of discussions among them and arguments and all of that fun stuff. Okay? Some believed in this is the way that you should do Shabbat, and some thought this is the way you should do Shabbat. You can't work at all. Well, you can work to feed the hungry. There were lots of minor interpretations. And this is what made the differences between the sects. It wasn't that they were following people. It's that they were following interpretations. Okay? So Paul was in this mix somewhere. So, and we don't know exactly where theologically Paul was in the mix, other than those basic things that Pharisees believed. They all believed that, and that's what they would hold themselves to be called a Pharisee. That's what it means, right? The entire Tanakh is the Bible, believe in an afterlife and the celestial beings, and we believe in the oral law. That's the big three. Now, Paul's clearly close to the Sicarii, close to the Zealots, and he's going to go after, and he's going after the Messianic Jews. So he's going to go to Damascus, and he's going to take his, pardon the phraseology, crusade to Damascus. So he wants letters of legitimacy to take his crusade to Damascus, right? So who does he go to? Who does he go to? The high priest. Why does he go to? He's a Pharisee. He's not a Sadducee. Why does he go to the high priest? Why doesn't he go to the head of the Sanhedrin? Who was the head of the Sanhedrin at the time? Gamaliel. Gamaliel. And what did Gamaliel say about the Messianic believers just a couple chapters before? It says, if it's not of God, it's going away. And it is of, if it is of God, then you could find yourself on the wrong side of God. You don't want to do that. He came out neutral. Was Gamaliel sending people out to kill the Messianic? No. So the Sanhedrin wasn't going to send him. But who would? The Sadducees, the high priest. So he went to the high priest. Right? High priest says, you want to kill Messianic Jews? You got my vote. So he goes off and he's got letter. He's got authorization from the high priest, but he doesn't have authorization from the Sanhedrin. Say, he was a politician. So he goes toward Damascus, and God places a vision on him. Right? Much as God places the vision on the donkey. There's a donkey, and a donkey sees an angel of God, a messenger of God, with a sword. A messenger of God with a sword. Who's the messenger of God with a sword? Where is his normal post? The messenger of God with the sword. Where? Right. Isn't he guarding the gates of Gan Eden? Of the Garden of Eden, right? Who's the angelic being with the sword? It's Michael. Right? The head of God's legions. So whenever we see the angel with the sword, that's Michael. Okay? So how could he be guarding the entrance to Gan Eden and still be in front of the donkey at the same time? It's outside of time and space. You can do all kinds of things when you're outside of time and space. Okay? So he's in both places. Okay? Donkey sees him. Donkey says, I ain't going nowhere. Right? So Balaam strikes the donkey. Right? Hikai strikes the donkey. Strikes him again. Okay? Has anybody worked with a donkey, with a burro? No, I have. You have. Okay? Stubborn. When they decide they're going to do something, there's not a lot you can do about it. I mean, you have to physically impede them. If they decide they're going over there, that, you know, it's time to go to the barn. Forget it. They're going to the barn. Okay, you have to actually physically. Okay, so the donkey's not going anywhere. No doubt Balaam is used to this because this is the kind of thing that donkeys do. I'm staying right here. So he beats the donkey because it's what you got to do. You know? Hey, what are you beating me for, right? Donkey's talking to him. And then God opens Balaam's eyes and he sees Mikhail standing there with the sword. So I ain't going there either. So what does this mean that God opened his eyes? What's going on? He couldn't see the angel, but the donkey could. And then he could see the angel. Then he could see Mikhail. Why? What is it? The answer is it's perception, right? There are five different words in Hebrew that are translated solar spirit. In Greek or English, pneuma, just one word, soul. And the Hebrew words don't mean that at all. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. And we know that the type of soul that prophecy comes from is called the neshama. And you and I, walking around normally, do not perceive through our own neshama. Prophets do on occasion. And Balaam is here and had been talking to God, and that is through the perceptive level of the neshama. And here, through the neshama, God allows him to see the angel standing in the way, Mikhail. Okay, fast forward. So Paul's walking on his way to Damascus. And God stops him in his tracks with a vision. A light from heaven flashed all around him. Light from heaven flashed all around him. Those of you that have been studying Ezekiel a little bit, right? Know the flashing of the light within the Ruach Sara. Falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Shaul, why do you keep persecuting me? And he says, Sir, who are you? He said, I am Yeshua, and you are persecuting me. Okay? Just like the donkey stopped in his tracks, Paul stopped in his tracks and was forever changed. He was forever changed. Okay? Because God chose to use him who was persecuting the people to change him around. One of the great lessons here is that God can use anyone. He can use the most unlikely person. Okay? You have to change. You have to change. Now, Paul is given a vision to indicate he should change. Sometimes we're not given the vision to indicate we should change, but we can use the story. Okay? How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is one, but the light bulb has to want to change. Okay? What I'm saying is that here, in these stories, here in this synagogue, where we are, there is a vision here to change. To change for the better. To change toward God. Shuvat l'Adonai. Turn back. If you get off the path, take the steps back onto the path. There is no expectation of perfection. What there is an expectation of is intent and progress. That you walk. You walk on the path. We are Edat HaDerech, the congregation of the way, to follow the way. It's here. Everybody steps off the way. Everybody except Yeshua. And part of Yeshua's job here was to show us how to not step off of the way. But we all do. So get back on the path. Walk back on the path. Right? Paul was way off the path. Paul was way off the path. So was Balak, king of Moab. Okay? But Paul was able to walk back on the path and head in the right direction. And God used it. And Balak didn't like it either. But he was directed back onto the right path. And out of him came Messiah. Out of Moab came Messiah. Okay? So the idea is, don't be discouraged. Don't look at what your life is, what it has become, things you've done in the past. That's not the important thing. The important thing is, look at the opportunity that you have to be better. Do better. Walk with God. Change from a zealot in the opposite direction to a zealot in the proper direction. Okay? There is no expectation to be perfect. Not here. Okay? God doesn't expect you to be perfect. God wants you to be walking in the right direction, that's all. And when you step out of the right direction, step back onto the right direction. That's all. Return to the path. Shabbat Shalom.